This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is Houston Huddleston from New Starship, and I'm restoring the Enterprise D bridge, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated TNG show. I am your host this week, sitting in the center chair, Daniel Prue. And joining me this week, as always, are my favorite hosts. We have Darren Moser, who is the dry dock shuttle pilot. And Darren, I don't mean to be offensive, but I have to ask the question, what is the purpose of your job? I mean, presumably, even if the new ship does not have any transporter system, the dry dock would. So why, like, do we just circle the new ship at least four times? Or, like, what's the point?
Ever since 2238, when we had that horrific transporter accident, you may have remembered it from Star Trek The Motion Picture. Actually, that was the best job security this position has ever had. And so, basically, it is now mandated in the Starfleet Charter that there must be at least five dry dock shuttles on standby at any time. They don't really like using them around dry dock. And I have to say, did you look at the effects of that dry dock shot? It was like sawdust in my eyes. I cannot wait for that to come into HD. Okay. So anyway, good job security. And if you haven't, you know, seen the Enterprise D yet, Daniel, you're in for a treat, if I might be so bold.
All right. And also with us, as always, we have future professor of politics at Cambridge, Philip Gilfus. Now, Philip, I have a real big problem with your office. We're in the 24th century. Why would you decorate it in a 19th century fashion? This seems really outdated. This is ridiculous.
Get away.
Is that Zazzy? Is that Zazzle in the background?
I had a couple of cats. There's like 20 of them in this thing. But luckily, though, I have a maid, and she cleans up. Because I got to tell you, having this many cats around, it really, really stinks up the place. Though she can't make a decent cup of tea to save her life. Oh, well, but I'll tell you what, she always makes me laugh.
All right, Philip. Oh, thanks. So anyways, if our listeners who can never tell what jokes we're making have not been able to decipher yet, we are actually doing the finale episode of TNG. We are going to be talking about All Good Things. Certainly, I imagine, not the only time we'll talk about All Good Things, because it's a pretty important episode, but the last time I was hosting Earl Grey, we talked about Farpoint, and I thought it might be fitting to do a little bit of a kind of a contrast with All Good Things here. So now we're going to talk about All Good Things. Where do we start? Let's start with the fact that this is the final episode of TNG, obviously. Darren, what do you think about just your initial impressions? Like, are you a fan of it? I mean, I think everybody's a fan of this episode, certainly. But let's just get your kind
are
of...
Are you trying to color my reaction before I even give my opinion, Daniel?
No. You always use his knowledge of Next Generation against him.
No, I really like All Good Things. I think it's got a lot of the, you know, great Star Trek aspects to it. It's got a lot of great TNG aspects. It's got time travel. It's got Q. I like how it has a crew. I mean, of the three time periods that Picard goes to, two of them, he's not quite in that fully authoritative position of power. I mean, yes, he's the captain in the past, but he just signed the lease on that brand new starship, and they don't really trust him as much. And in the future, he's going crazy, so they really don't trust him. And they have a lot of, you know, apparently bad history with him. But, you know, those things aside, I think it's a very strong episode, a very touching episode, and I think it's a lot of fun. I think it really sets the bar high for series finales.
And what about you, Philip?
I was telling Darren in the Arboretum that I remember watching this episode in live run, and it came on twice. They aired it once, and then they aired it like that weekend or the next week. Which the funny part was, I missed the beginning both times, so it took me a while to ever see the beginning of this episode. But I mean, as a season finale of The Next Generation, I mean I'm sure we'll talk about challenges or problems, but it hits all the marks. I mean, considering this is The Next Generation, there really had never been a season finale of Star Trek before. I mean, think about it. There's no season finale of the original series.
It's called cancellation.
Yeah. And the original movies were still going on at this time, Star Trek 6 had already ended at this time. If you want to say that's a season finale for or a finale for the original, but this was the first time, and so the time travel aspect, which maybe now seems hackneyed, was perfect. I mean, all the fan things are there, all the old things and the future things, and we got to see what happened in the future with our favorite characters, and we got to go back to the very beginning of an encounter, and we got to tie a bow around everything at the end there. I mean, not like tying a bow in maybe like the Deep Space Nine sense of like, okay, this is what every character is going to do, but then we knew we were going to the movies, so we didn't have to, have a finale. We just had to sort of like wrap up everything that the TV show meant. So I know we'll go into the specifics, but I think it's a great finale.
Well, and like you were saying, Philip, about watching it, first run. I mean, I remember that too. And wasn't it after that Jonathan Frakes hosted the top five fan episodes? So we had this great primer leading up to the last episode, and so it was like an afternoon of Star Trek. It was so much Star Trek.
And this, I mean, there was, I remember this, a really big media buildup that this was, I mean, it's not like, say, Cheers, but close to it. I mean, I still have articles, if I go through my old scrapbooks of like, stuff in the paper, the season finale or the series finale of The Next Generation, and articles and, blah, 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 all about it. Whereas, when Voyager and Deep Space Nine and Enterprise ended, it was like, meh, outside of Star Trek publications, and nothing against this series, but I just think that the cultural and the media kind of, Next Generation, this was a big deal, and I don't know what the final draw was, but it was one of those kind of the series finales that was definitely a big deal.
And Noah, actually, that brings up my next point, which is what I want to talk about, is the fact that if we can, so all good things, obviously we talked a little bit about how TOS didn't get...
I mean, Turnabout Intruder doesn't solve
Intruder
for you.
No, yeah, it's oh boy. Let's not even talk about Turnabout Intruder. We'll let the Stand Aerobic guys. They can have that episode all they want and talk about it for 10 episodes if they really want to. Because of the weird position that TOS was in at the time, and honestly, I don't even know what the practice was for series finales in the 60s. Maybe it was totally different, so it wasn't a big deal. Deep Space Nine had the end of a 9-episode arc at that point. Like, it was like, it's so different. It's totally different than All Good Things. It's like Deep Space Nine tried to wrap everything up. At the end of that series, they wanted every loose end to be tied and everything to be done. And with the same thing with Voyager, when we had they got back home, and spoiler alert.
Well,
and
I don't know if they really tied any threads there. They're home, and then what? Credits.
Well, right. And but the point is, like with both Deep Space Nine and Voyager, those are the culmination of the journeys of the entire series. Maybe one possibly slightly more successful than the other, but that those are for those shows to talk about. And with Enterprise, we also kind
had
of
some
jumped...
great guest stars, man. Great guest stars.
Yes, we jump forward a few years and we get to see
decades different... even.
Yeah, maybe even centuries. but it's interesting. I think All Good Things... It holds a special place specifically in the Star Trek mythos, but even in all of TV mythos. What I love about what my favorite aspect of All Good Things is the fact that we end the series on a completely neutral note, when it's like, hey, you know what? The show is over, but the adventure is not. Right. So my favorite part of the thing is that Picard goes into, at the end, he goes into the card game. He's like, I should have done this a long time ago, but you know what? And I separate the TV show at this point, watching the series, I separate the TV show and the movies. And I'm like, you know what? The Enterprise D is actually still out there exploring and having adventures every week and just doing its thing. Like, is that just me, or do you guys feel like the same kind of thing?
It's your season 8 podcast episode.
Well, it's interesting. Something I thought of when rewatching this episode to brush up on it is, I mean, basically, didn't, as soon as this episode was done, almost instantaneously, they were shooting Generations. And so you have to wonder, I mean, obviously some of the writers knew, and I'm sure Rick Berman knew, but did the cast know the Enterprise was going to be destroyed in the movie at this point? Because, I mean, yes, you have it in the future time of All Good Things, but, I mean, definitely when Picard's looking around the table and he's, you know, has that kind of misty-eyed moment, it's like, yeah, in a year, your ship is going to be gone. And they are talking about being, you know, scattered to the wind. And it was just, I never thought about it at that point, if that might have influenced their acting in this episode.
They probably would have stolen a whole lot more props if they hadn't.
Can I steal the bridge? Just this whole bridge?
No, we're just going to throw it out. Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. It is one of those things about, and, you know, we already talked Generations with the Standard Orbit crew, but I don't want to say Generations takes away from All Good Things, but it is good to, like, watch All Good Things, have a nice breather, you know, wait a month, and then watch Generations. Yeah. You know, let All Good Things sink in, and you know, don't just go straight into Generations.
Just skip Generations, and then go to First Contact, and you're like, oh, at some point later, they gave him an upgraded ship. That's great. I wonder what happened to the D. It's probably in the Mothball fleet, you know, maybe a museum orbiting the moon or something. Yeah.
Well, they tried to decommission her a couple of years ago, but the good thing about being an admiral is...
All Good Things, seriously, like, it makes me wish, and I know, like, they're, like, the people in charge of Star Trek at the time in the 90s, in the mid-90s, were like, wow, we are riding a high wave here, let's just push it for all it's worth. All Good Things makes me wish they had waited 5 years for the TNG movies to come out. Like, I in my mind, I want to populate at least a few years worth of adventures of the Enterprise and our crew as they were before we get to Generations. It's fine if you want to do that, but, like, it's literally like a 3-month, 6-month hiatus. Like, it's nothing. It's like,
check the star date. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, then maybe they would have had time to actually make enough uniforms for the entire crew by the time the episodes of Generations comes about. But,
you know, whatever enough time it took to change the bridge of the Enterprise D to, you know, add the side stations and give Worf a chair and all that stuff.
Although another point that I just thought of is, you know, I don't know about the USS Titan, because if you think about it, the two people to have destroyed the Enterprise are the Troys. Diana crashed it in Generations, and Admiral Riker in future All Good Things is the one at, you know, he's in command of the future Enterprise that gets destroyed in the rift. So pretty much if you have a starship called Enterprise, watch out for Mr. and Mrs. Riker.
But this was Badmiral Riker.
Oh, yeah.
So
he was at least Grumpy Merle Riker. At the
I don't know. He was pretty dang grumpy.
Well, you know, I think his problem was he had been sitting in that chair too long. And so I think that's probably was.
And we all know you can't go over the back of the captain's chair to sit down. And so it's just probably throwing his back.
Even if they lift the center section there like 2 or 3 feet, you still can't do it. There's no way.
Jump over the horseshoe and just like land.
He can't do a Worf.
I got to get a meter closer before I can fire my phaser.
Yeah, but I mean the whole concept, which again, obviously, we're just going to talk about how much we love it. So if you don't like it, oh well. But I mean, I think that the great concept of this finale, again, was, you know, to look towards the past, you know, all the way to Encounter at Farpoint. And for those of you who may have wondered, like, what's the difference between the seventh season of Next Generation and when it started, it starkly shows you the difference between season one and season seven.
Let's hold up an A-B mirror comparison during this episode.
So you might see some slight character development from cheerleader Troy to, you know, actual counselor Troy. But I think the future part too of showing that our characters maybe don't end up places that we like, and exploring that, you know, because it's the whole fantasy of when you're doing a series finale, you know, well, what becomes of our characters? Like, you know, like you just said, Daniel, what do we imagine? And this shows you, okay, well, this is what could have happened, which always sounded weird that, like, most of them left Starfleet, but I don't know, that's just me. But you know, it's sort of interesting to see these other lives, and then, like, oh, okay. And so you get that fantasy right there on the season finale, but then it kind of goes back to kind of what you're saying, Daniel, to the present, you know, quote-unquote present, and then says, well, maybe that'll happen, maybe that won't.
Well, it's like you said before when we talked about Best of Both Worlds, you know, it has the same feel, gut feel, when Riker, or it was either Riker and Wesley or Geordi, one of them were talking, and I think it was Wesley and Geordi, but they're talking about, yeah, maybe, you know, we may not all be here by the time you come back from Starfleet Academy. You know, we may have different assignments. Like, it's a military peacekeeping armada, blah, blah, blah organization, you know. So that gut feel from that episode was very similar in that future aspect of, yeah, they may, you know, depending on how far in the future, we may not be flying around in starships anymore. Now with that whole, you know, galactic transporter will be invented, I'm sure.
Well, because I, you know, and also using time travel as a series finale, like I said, kind of seems hokey. I mean, it works, I would argue, but it seems hokey now. But, like, again, remember, these are the first people who've done it, is Next Generation. Because, like, you know, Voyager basically kind of used it with Admiral Janeway time traveling, and then Enterprise kind of used it. Not that there's time traveling per se, but they.
The viewer is experiencing different times.
Well, not even the Riker part, but just that they're moved, you know, the Enterprise storyline, like, to, like, 10 years later, and then, like, okay, well, that's interesting, you know, showing the characters in the future, quote-unquote. But I think, you know, time travel certainly is a part of Star Trek, and I think it does work here because you get, I mean, Q, we haven't even mentioned him yet. You know, again, all that whole, and again, not to gush, which we are, but that whole from Encounter at Farpoint, the journey, the trial that we've gone through all these 7 years and what it's meant and all those callbacks. I think all of it is just, not all of it, but most of it is here into that season finale or series finale.
Well, all right, Philip. I mean, apparently you're in charge of the show, so let's talk about Q, because that's a pretty important part of this episode and a very important part of the series overall, and obviously is bridged completely in this episode where we literally see him as he was in Encounter. You know, Picard very, very, very intent on getting to that moment in Encounter at Farpoint where he encounters Q, and then, you know, he kind of bridges the gap of the entire series, which I think is actually one of the brilliant, I think there are many really intelligent things that the writers did with this episode, and I think this is one of them. That the fact that, like, we opened with kind of this awkward, maybe not fully fleshed out, maybe not completely interesting Q character, and we end with him, you know, being, like, a very important, very essential, very emotional character of our series. And man, like, can like, talk about character development. The relationship between Q and Picard in Encounter at Farpoint, how different is it from, you know, where the very first moment they meet, between that and the moment we see them at the end of the series? Like, Q in All Good Things, Q and Picard, they're kind of buddies at the end, right?
Like, yeah, it's almost like a master and his beloved pet.
Well, you know, Daniel, the trial never ended.
The trial never will. It will never end.
Well, and even, you know, to think in a meta way, I mean, remember, Q was the B plot that was added in to encounter that wasn't even originally supposed to be there. And I can't even imagine the 7 years without him showing up, and especially in this episode. I mean, it ties it all together, and it doesn't feel like, oh, how is this going to actually happen and work? Oh, let's just have Q showed up, and that's why. It's like there was actual thought, and you could tell it was very deliberately constructed around that character as well, even though he doesn't even show up in very many scenes. I mean, it's pretty much just Picard in multiple makeups and costumes, like every shot of this episode.
You know, yeah. And one of the things too that's really interesting while you were talking, I was thinking about, is that we don't get, and this is very rough, and again, I haven't looked specifically at this, but we don't get Q in Encounter until roughly 50% through the episode, maybe. Not really, anyways. And we don't actually, the same thing here, we don't get Q until about halfway through. And I don't know if they may have done that deliberately. I don't, because on Netflix, they just kind of make it one big episode, so you don't know where they cut it off. But is, you know, we don't get Q maybe until the second act, right? Or at least like to the teaser, to the second act. Like he shows up maybe.
But except for this episode was never shown like as two parts. It was, there was no, or was it, Dan?
No, you're absolutely yeah. right. You might be right. Yeah. It was this 2 hour block. But the way I'm looking, the way I'm thinking about it is you're right, absolutely right. Because sometimes you kind of forget that, but yeah.
I think because Star Trek usually, or at least Next Gen, was usually blocked in like a 5 act block. And that being, each act being between a commercial break. There was usually 4 commercial breaks and 5 blocks.
Back in the old days.
Back in the old days when they cranked out 26 episodes a season. but yeah, no, that's a good point though. I think, I don't know if that was deliberate or just happened to have a resemblance and a balance to Encounter. But it works, and I'm glad he's not in the first shot. Like, hey, look what I can do, you know. And now you're in the future. It's like and I love how Picard is slowly remembering more and more of the other times as it progresses. Because, I mean, I will almost want to know what shot did he. I want to see what was he experiencing right before he first showed up, because he's talking about before he was even on the Enterprise. And I'm like, we never saw that, you know.
He was waiting for the shuttle to get ready.
Oh, yeah. It was very boring.
No, I mean, talking about Q, because I think even when I was rewatching it to talk today, I was kind of like, wait, when does Q show up? Doesn't Q show up already? How long does it take for Q to show up?
Isn't this a Q episode?
Because you're almost with Jean-Luc in the struggle of being in the past of like, okay, something weird's happening. Wait a minute. I know something weird that happened in the past. Q, let me make sure, even though, you know, things are trying to divert me away from what happened at Farpoint, I'm still going there. I'm still going to go to the same coordinates. Q, where are you? Where is he? Because I know at least he can help me, almost, even before he even knew the Q had a part of it.
Although now that I think about it, you kind of have to not know about Q for a while, because if Picard knew about Q in the very beginning, then in the future time frame when no one believes him, he could just say, Q is showing up and pushing me around through time, and everyone would be like, oh, okay, yeah, that's totally a thing that happens
sure,
to us.
Sure,
so.
Jean-Luc, it's always Q.
Well,
get the sedative.
It's true, because the thing about it is, you were exactly right, Philip, because he mentions it like 3 or 4 times in the Encounter timeline before he's like, no, they're like, oh, there's Romulans at the neutral zone. He's like, no, we're gonna go back to Farpoint. And then he gets to Farpoint and he's like, hey, counselor, can you sense anybody that, oh, I don't know, is a higher intelligence than everyone else?
And she's like, Tholian webs.
And she's like, nope. And then he's like, Data, can you sense any sort of crazy, ridiculous giant walls that, you know, we couldn't get
O'Brien
through?
Are you feeling cold? Like, any frostiness happening? Nothing?
And so, like, we, you know, the episode kind of rewards long-term viewers of the show in that way, because it does kind of tease the whole Q, and then it finally does happen. There's no 25-minute separation sequence in this episode, okay, surprisingly, but that's okay. Which actually kind of bridges the gap into the next subject I wanted to talk about, is there is a huge, like I said, like I wanted to talk about this week because we talked about Encounter the last time around. And there is a massive overlap between Encounter at Farpoint and this episode. And I think it's very intentional, obviously. And I think that part of the writers were like, you know what, we should probably show the entire 7 years that the show has gone through, the growth that it's experienced. And I don't consider myself like a TV guy who watches thousands and thousands of shows, but I can't even think in my mind a show that has developed more and changed more in the show run than TNG did, like how much it grew and changed and developed and evolved. And I think it was a brilliant, brilliant move from the writers to be like, hey, this is the first episode. This is the last episode. You see the difference, right? We did pretty good.
See right here? Right here? Yeah.
Was he talking to people that worked in a studio nearby? I'm just throwing that out there.
I think it would have been really funny if in one of the past sequences he had stood up and he put his hands down to try to do the Picard maneuver and just rubbed him against his chest because he was back in the One Piece and he forgot. I think that would have been a funny little insert.
Yeah, because I mean, it's interesting. Like for me, I think one thing that's kind of weird is like, why doesn't Data show up until like halfway through the Encounter timeline? Like everyone's on the bridge of like, aren't we missing Data? And then, like, finally shows up in engineering. I'm like, was he wandering the halls trying to figure out where everything was? Like a new Riker or something?
He actually got stuck in the holodeck, and because Riker wasn't picked up to find him and leave him out,
he was whistling the whole time.
Yep,
he was just busy whistling Data.
He is, you know, it's really hard for Data to get bored on a ship like this.
I actually really, really like that moment. Data plays obviously probably one of the more significant. Data plays a way bigger part than Riker does in this episode. Like, he's super, like, he's the one, obviously, you know, we all know that, like, he's Data, you're clever in any time. And he's a super important part of that aspect. But I do love when they go back in time, when, like, there's a special moment that Picard, because we never see Picard's first interaction with Data, and like this is kind of maybe their way of retconning that, like, oh, this is what happens, this is when he sees him. Like, oh, of course it's different than what we're used to, but this is a substitute because we never actually got to see the original version of that.
One thing I like about this episode and I don't know how they did it, but they did it, of where they have like these fan moments. But like when then you remember, like you've been watching this, like to pretend it's like live run, you know, you've been watching the whole season 7, and they do like these fan moments of like, oh my gosh, you know, Picard sees Data, and you see that expression in his face, like, oh gosh, it's Data, this is gonna be cool. Like, yeah, we see Data every day. Why is this so cool? But it is. And then when in the future where like Beverly says, oh, you want to do, you know, engage once more time, you know, for old time's sake. And he's
like single tier.
Yes. Like, oh, yeah, he's going to say engage. Like, yeah, we've seen him do it for like, it's not a big deal, but it's still cool to see. I don't know how they make us feel like it's a fan moment, but it is.
That's a great point, Philip. It's like just last week, Picard said engage like twice, and yet it wasn't nearly as powerful as him, you know, sitting down in the. Not since Wesley graced the bridge have we had such a dramatic arm sweep towards the center chair as we too felt like we were sitting with our beloved captain. But I think, although one of the things that Data really points out in the future timeline is that when you have tenure, I mean, that he has to have tenure because no way would they let him have so many cats in that room without tenure. It's no way.
I think when they do the Blu-ray, they're going to CGI in more cats.
More cats.
The thing we have to remember is that if Data is not killed during the Nemesis timeline.
Wait, hold on. What?
What? Oh, sorry.
Wait, what? Yarhu?
Spoilers. He becomes a crazy cat lady
with gray, like, in his hair,
like literally the craziest cat lady that you'll ever know. And I'm wondering, because I was watching the episode and I'm like this maid seems like she has everything together, and then all of a sudden they say, you know, computer, end the hologram with the resume hologram with the fireplace. I'm like, are those holographic cats, Data? Come on.
Well, although I also like how, you know, in the future, though, Data's Data, which is so awesome because he's like Well, this is highly unlikely, but I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt because I'm Data and I'm awesome like that. And let's figure out how we can prove if you're maybe right. I'm not going to look at you sideways. I'm going to look at Geordi sideways and kind of like nod like, mm-hmm. But, you know, but he also has a lot more emotion in the future. Like he smiles a lot more.
Yeah, I do love that part where, you know, Picard's like, oh, I y'all think I'm crazy. And Geordi's like, no one's saying that. It is like, yeah, no, I totally thought that. But
for 0.03 microseconds, sir, yeah. For an android, I thought it for an eternity.
No, I oh, my goodness. This, we should talk about this because this is the ultimate Data. Like, this is where Data wanted to get to. This is where the viewer wanted to see Data. Like, you can tell he's still an android. But he, like, the moment that Data has with Geordi and Captain Beverly Picard, which is really awkward to say.
It's hyphenated.
Yeah. when they're, like, they're talking about, oh, do you think he's crazy? Do you think, you know, and, you know, I don't know. This is like the ultimate Data. This is where we all wanted Data to be. Like, he's not crazy like he is in Generations, you know, making tricorder sounds with his hands. He's actually like still a logical, reasonable android, but he can emote. He can talk in contractions. He can, you know what I mean? Like, he can relate to his fellow crew members. And I he's so compelling. I wish that we got to see the 20 years in between. So we could see how he got to that point. I love it. It's amazing.
Well, and I mean, as you were talking about, Daniel, how there's a lot of those little fan service moments. And although I have to feel that Picard was really the fan, Picard going through all this, he's us because, you know, when they're like, okay, well, what do you want to do? I want to go see Data. Okay, fine. We'll go see Data. Well, we need to get, we need to talk to some Klingons. What about Worf? Yes, Worf. it's like every fan is screaming at the top of their lungs going, yeah, bring Worf back, all the crew together. I mean, it's basically like what we get in the movies, like how Worf keeps showing up and all the random times. Although by then it's just like, oh yeah, hey Worf, yeah. I'm glad you were stopping by for that symposium or whatever that
you
brought
that
you
cup of sugar that you needed. Yeah,
I had to go to the bathroom and I showed up on the bridge.
But isn't that so true? Just his reaction, especially to Worf, it's such fan service.
I have to say, I love the moment where I love the conversation Picard has with Worf, where Worf is like, you know exactly what to do to manipulate me. And Picard's like, that's exactly why I do it.
It's like, really? It always works, Worf.
So he just needs a cup of Earl Grey and a pinky up in that scene. He just takes a sip.
It's so ridiculous.
You know, and I don't know why this viewing, but the part about future Picard and the Iromatic syndrome and all that, which also, to me, it is going to sound weird. Picard played another, or Sir Patrick played Picard completely different, and not just because of that he was having mental issues. Like, his accent really, really, really comes out as old man Picard. I mean, it's almost getting like Cockney to an extent. The old man's losing it, yes. You know, it's like, really. Yeah. and it's but also, like, upon this viewing, and not to be like serious or whatever, but I'm like, you almost sympathize with all the characters who think Picard's crazy. You're like, if I didn't know, yeah, the guy's probably nuts, you know. I mean, like, because he really plays that part, and maybe just got me in this viewing. Not that I've really know someone like this, but maybe because I'm older than the first time, you know, it's been like 20 years when I first saw this episode, you know, to appreciate that someone older going through a mental disease, and like I said, this whole future that we see, that characters may not be where we want them to be. You know, Worf is a governor, but he's not. Klingon High Council and Beverly and him got married, but the divorce, you know. And then Picard has this, the great Picard, the Picard, is degenerating before our eyes. And, you know, and to see that he's, you know, having trouble talking and thinking, and he's just like, you know, like your grandparent in the home. It's kind of like, oh, scary, but it's so real. I mean, even though it's funny in a way, it's not, and it's very dramatic, but I just love how they play all that together. I feel sorry for future Geordi Because, like, Picard's like, George's like, well, what do you want to do? I want to go see Data. Fine, fine. We'll go see Data. And
he's like, gosh, I had to show up and just to see my friend, and now we're going on an adventure. Classic Picard. I definitely like the interaction with Geordi. And although I'd say LeVar Burton has aged way more gracefully than future Geordi has been made out to look 20 years later.
Like, are we at that time?
No, we're past it. We're way past it, actually.
They said 25 years.
25 years since... No, they said 25 years, and we're like 25 years past the start of TNG, so we're like way past where they are.
No, but I'm saying since the end of All Good Things, has it been 25 years? I mean, could every actor
probably right around now.
Now play the scene straight.
Well, actually, we should be 21 years because it ended in 93.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, so 21 years. So almost there.
So for the season 7 Blu-rays, they should literally reshoot these the episode.
Wait, didn't I talk about that long?
Yeah, I remember
about
you did actually.
Like
I think you did.
Perfect
actually,
or something.
Like
did,
episode
yeah.
3 or something of Earl Grey.
Perfect, but yeah.
Okay,
that's right. It was Future Imperfect, but yeah, this would be even better.
They did not know that Admiral Riker would have gotten fat.
That's even better than Future Imperfect. I want to see that. I want them to reshoot all the sequences, and it's even cut. Like, all you have to do is just insert all those specific shots of old Picard.
You know what though? One thing about that, Philip, as I was watching the episode, I was thinking, you know, when I was first watching it, I'm like, wait a minute, why is Picard acting like such a crazy old man? You know, during the future sequences. And at first I thought it was a weakness of the episode, but the more I watched it, the more I thought about it, is actually, I feel like Picard himself, the essence of Picard, is actually inhabiting these different characters, and which is actually kind of showing us a progression of the Picard character. Like in the encounter, the earliest timeline, he's got to convince his crew that he's worth following. Like, you know, he has to show them that... you know, I'm saying crazy stuff, but, you know, it might be worth it to die for, which they do, really. And obviously in the established Picard that we know in the current timeline, we see that he's there. He's achieved that. This is like prime Picard, and everybody follows him unquestionably. They're never like, oh, what's going on? And then in future Picard timeline, he acts like a crazy old man because he's a crazy old man. And I don't know if he can prevent that from happening because he clearly makes some bad judgment calls, like running to 10 forward and first of all, not knowing where 10 forward is. And the ensign's like, try deck 10 and then go forward. And, you know, but that's
branding right there. If you need to know where 10 forward is.
Well, you didn't see that.
Guinan locked that up.
You didn't see the deleted scene where that ensign showed old Picard how to use the computer system. And then when Picard worked in the turbo lift, the ensign checked him out. So,
as Picard walks away, his robe slightly separates in the middle.
Oh, we're going too far.
Okay. Okay, guys. All right.
At least she lived a short life after that, at the Enterprise blowing up, putting her out of her misery.
That was a guy.
Okay. All right. So, okay, one of the last things I want to talk about is, and we've been talking a little bit about it, is kind of the breadth of where this episode takes place, right? Like, we have the encounter, we have three separate timelines. We have the encounter timeline, we have the current timeline, and we have the future timeline. And as we know, both the encounter timeline and the future timeline are slightly different than what we're used to. And because we actually get a future timeline that's very different, and we get a past timeline that's also very different, because Chief O'Brien could never have been the chief engineer during the first episode. But which actually reminds me, I do have to say, when Picard's like, I know you can do it, and O'Brien's like, this sounds like a job for the chief engineer, all I was thinking was, I wish Picard had said, "We don't have a chief engineer."
You left Space Dock without a chief engineer?
He gets installed on Tuesday.
And Picard's trying to remember which one it was. Oh, yes, you mean Lopez. Or Argyle. Or
Lynch?
Which one was it?
And by Tuesday, we mean season two.
But to my knowledge, this idea, moving through time, showing you... You know, I don't know. Can any other show in the universe ever existed have a lead?
You're setting the bar pretty dang high.
Hang on, but you'll see what I'm.
There's a show on Titan that's pretty good in Saturn's orbit, but no.
Yeah, but can any show that doesn't have Patrick Stewart as a lead convincingly play a Patrick Stewart from the current times as the same Patrick Stewart that you would see 7 years ago or 25 years in the future? Like we've all seen the pictures of this is All Good Things Picard from 25 years in the future. And this is literally Patrick Stewart from 25 years in the future. And Patrick Stewart looks better than he does in All Good Things as himself. So like, this is pretty amazing. This time travel element. Do you guys like that or what?
I feel like there's a painting somewhere that's covered up in Sir Patrick's house. Never mind.
Literary reference.
Well, I really enjoy the time travel aspect. I think it's really fun, especially towards the very end when they're about to enter into the anomaly, and it intercuts so quick that you're looking for cues in each shot. It's like, okay, which one is this? Yeah, yes, you're looking for cue in each shot. It's like, okay, which uniform are they in? Okay, which one... You know, is Data got the hair in this one? Okay, now we know what's going on because it's so well cut. I mean, I never was really lost, though. I could always tell, okay, this is what's going here. This is what's going there. And, what I really like about this whole episode is how the current timeline in the middle, the way they work it is it makes it feel like this is the middle of the story of the Enterprise and this crew. I mean, for us, it's the end watching. It's like, it's over and it's sad and they're about to be gone. But because of the time travel and because of how they ended the episode, it's like, no, this is the middle of these characters' lives. They're going to continue on with more adventures and more story. And it's almost as if they were jumping around between the beginning of season one, the end of season seven, and like somewhere in season like four or five, you know, they did a really good job though of moving that kind of feeling across, which I think is one of the strongest points of the episode.
Actually, I'll say that that's actually really brilliant. I've never considered that the timeline, the end of the seventh season of TNG, like, you're absolutely right. Now that I'm thinking about it, that makes total sense. Like, that's probably exactly what they were going for. Hey, this is the center. This is like the middle of their timeline. Like, I've always considered it when I watch the episode, I always think that, oh, this is definitely their prime. That's how I see it. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, you know, we see the beginning of them and then we see the end of them. For some reason, I never connected those dots. And You're absolutely 100% right, and I'm excited that you said that because the way they end the episode totally corroborates with that idea. Like, it's just like, oh no, it's not a big deal. We're just gonna, you know, we're gonna keep going on, and we're obviously not gonna keep going on because they mentioned this specifically 10 times during the episode. Oh, the future could be different than what we see here, just in case. Loophole.
They just didn't want to get canon locked. They knew better.
Exactly. And the funny thing is, too, I specifically wrote this down, is that we have this literal word-for-word conversation in the observation lounge, at least in five other episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation, where Picard says, oh, this is what is going to happen. This is what we're supposed to do. And Riker says, what if we try not doing anything? Would that work? And then Picard says, no, we must proceed as normal because that's what we must do. And, you know, they have that same conversation. But no, you're absolutely right, Darren. That was a great point.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Shades of Babylon 5 for fans, that Picard apparently is the one, because he's the one who was, the one who is, and the one who will be, apparently. But of course, Daniel, you're forgetting about the fourth timeline in this episode. That would be the beginning of life on Earth.
Oh, gosh.
Which, like, this was in, what, 93, 94? I mean, yeah. The fact that they showed this, and then, like, it's funny because I'm like, oh, okay, proteins, got it, you know, amino acids. And, like, as a, you know, however, 13-year-old, that worked for science class for the next, like, 15 years. Cause apparently, like, no one had ever paid attention. Like I was watching Cosmos the other week, and they did the same thing about, you know, the beginnings of life on Earth. And I'm like, I knew
this.
Just
took the footage.
Go see all good things. Done. Done.
Just like Star Trek did it before it actually happened, like cell phones, iPads, beginning of the universe.
Though, I feel like it is a Jean-Luc Picard callback, because where did life on Earth begin? France.
Yeah, yeah. And I must say, this is a totally personal note, if Captain Picard showed up in Cosmos, my head would explode. I would die, and it would know.
We're now going to take the... what's the name of that ship that Neil...
The Starship Imagination.
We're going to take the Starship Imagination to the 24th century now and see our future, that everyone's face just melts off. But I think they could make it happen. But no, it's... What do you think, Daniel, about just the time travel aspect as a whole?
I think it's brilliant. I really do. I think that, you know... It was a really smart way for them to say, you know, hey, these are our characters. Here's the thing. Like, they're like, here are our characters before you knew them, slightly before you knew them. And some things, we'll fill in some things. Here are our characters as you know them now. And very strong characterization at that point. And here are really interesting things that might happen in the future. And, like, to a longtime viewer of the series, it's, how do you get any better than that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't. You get
it's like
the whole...
a clip show, but way better than any clip show could actually ever be. Because they tried that once and it didn't really
this
work.
Was
yeah,
shades
it was awful.
Awesome.
It was awful. Yeah. And you know, I can't say enough things, positive things about this episode.
I think when they were writing it, their first thought was, you know what? You know what episode wasn't long enough? Encounter at Farpoint. I think we need to flesh out that story just a wee bit more. And we only got one episode left to do it. That's 2 hours. So basically, is Encounter at Farpoint a 4-hour episode?
Is there a fan cut that includes for Encounter that includes the scenes from here?
Oh, like
I would watch that. I would be really excited to actually watch that, because we would definitely see such a stark contrast. You know what I mean? You would just know, and I think that would really actually be brilliant. One thing also.
Have you guys seen that Trouble and Tribbles supercut?
Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
One thing also I wanted to mention during the Q portion of the talk that I didn't mention before. Q is acutely aware of Livingston. So I thought it was kind of important for the Earl Grey crew to mention this.
You have
because,
a little wink, wink.
Oh yeah, he knows.
Worried about your fish too. I think that with the character development piece, they planted a seed in the present timeline of Riker's not too happy about Worf dating Troy, and then
that
conflict booms in the future.
The seed of a badmiral right there.
Yeah, but I mean that whole thing about character conflict. I mean, just like a little tweak you see Riker kind of like. There on the bridge, and then like 25 years later, he's like not talking to Worf and and all that stuff, and killing Troy. Man, who saw that one coming? Man, spoiler alert.
Oh, for a second, I thought you meant Riker killed Troy, and I'm like, wait a minute, I missed that scene.
Well,
when did they explain?
They never explained how she died. I'll leave it to the fans to.
There are actually 2 points that I want to say to that, Philip. The first is every time Worf and Troy are on screen or have a thing, or like I get the heebie-jeebies, it really creeps me out. And the second thing is, in a universe where Troy is dead, the Enterprise D lives on. That's all I want to say. It's the only thing that matters.
We don't have time to talk about time. We don't have the time.
I mean, I love the Enterprise E, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying.
So you, it's you conclusive can take a life, proof. Save the ship.
Well, and we have to mention, Daniel, though, I mean, you haven't commented on the future Enterprise E. I mean,
the nacelle.
Yeah.
You can't have an uneven amount of nacelles.
Thank
it makes
you.
No sense.
Thank you.
It's so stupid. Oh, hey, I've got an idea. Let's put this giant pylon directly behind the main shuttle bay. So as soon as you get out of the shuttle bay, you're going to crash into the nacelle. No, come on now. This is stupid.
Well, they never did use that shuttle bay. So
that is.
We're using shuttle bay 3 a whole lot now after Admiral Riker took command.
Okay. Well, all right, guys. Well, there's one final thing that I wanted to talk about before we end the episode. And that is overall thoughts. And I mean, I know we've kind of gotten the gist of it here, but Darren, like, you know, any criticisms, any complaints, any positive compliments, what do you like overall? Like, we're not going to give it a rating or anything like that, but you know, what do you think? Somebody mentions to you all good things. What do you say about it?
More scants.
No, dear Lord, no more scants. No, I just really love this episode. I actually just feel bad for how little I rewatch it because it's at the very end and it, you know, it's a longer episode. It's like an hour and a half without commercials. So, you know, having rewatched it for this episode, I really want to put it into my, you know, rewatch for fun roster a lot more often because, you know, often when I'm trying to pick something, I'll watch, you know, maybe, I don't know, The Gambit or something else.
Masks.
And this, no, gosh.
Don't say
no,
masks.
Not masks. But as, you know, I definitely want to put this in more often. And I can't wait to see it in HD when season 7 of Next Gen finally comes out. And, yeah, and to that point, I really hope, you know, on a sidebar, that they will continue the HD restorations for DS9 and Voyager, because I think every Trek deserves the HD treatment as we've been gracious enough to receive in TNG.
What about you, Philip?
You know, I think one thing that surprises me about this episode is because you think, like, okay, you know, in some ways it's this great thing, but that it's a one-off, you know, it is what it is. But two things, the one's going to be silly but true, another one's going to be true. I did notice that Q does wear lipstick in this episode, so that does solve for why he's wearing it in Voyager. But for the second thing, doing Star Trek Online now, I'm actually, my characters now wear the future uniform in this episode. And when I was doing research for how that uniform looks, I'm like, okay, they just showed it in All Good Things and that was it. That actually comes up in all the Star Trek series. They use it probably like 3 more times. Like, that is canon. Future Starfleet uniform. That wasn't just like All Good Things and we'll never use it again. Like, every other series uses that, like Voyager, Admiral Janeway, and Deep Space Nine, when they have these kind of weird, you know, future timelines that never happen, like Bashir and Dax, old Dax and old Bashir wearing. And so, like, I thought that was kind of funny that this is canon, even in this future that apparently never happened, you know, whatever. But I mean, you know, We've said it, you know, all good things is all great things. So that's all that can be said.
One last point I wanted to make is just how impressive it is how much they get right in all of the past sequences. Because remember, this is 93. There really wasn't an internet in 93 or a memory alpha or a Wikipedia. So I don't know what intern had to sit and watch Encounter Farpoint like a dozen times to just nail all the little details, but they did a really good job with that.
Well, like the old observation lounge, like where'd they find, like, I thought they would just have thrown away all the little ships that they still had the little, like, because I think to me the sharpest difference is in the later seasons they don't have the aircraft carrier Enterprise, and the early seasons they do in the observation lounge. And so, but yeah, it's definitely good stuff.
You know, I love this episode. There is no greater finale to me in all of television, frankly.
The universe, even. I like your scale, Daniel. I really like it.
The multi-universe.
In the universe, I can't explain it. I don't know why. I don't know. It's just like, I think it just, it's You know what it is, guys? You know what it is? I'm going to tell you right now why I love this episode so much. The last 1 minute of this episode is what makes this episode perfect for me.
Where they and this is the literally ride into the sunset.
Yes, straight on until morning. Second star to the left. You know, we didn't talk about this before, but I want to bring it up now. It's the Picard entering the card room. Well, at first Troy enters, right? She's the first one that enters. My question is, where's Barkley? Because I know he would want to play too.
Where's Ben?
Oh, Ben. Yeah, exactly.
He walks in after Picard and totally ruins the moment.
I just cleaned out some junior officers, and wait, why is everyone crying?
I should have done this a long time ago. Who are you?
He takes a half step in, just makes eye contact, and just backs out of the door.
But what a beautiful moment. You know, it perfectly encapsulates Picard as a character, doesn't it? Like, you know, Kirk would have had no problem playing cards with his Spock wouldn't have played cards.
But he was more of a chess man.
But. Yeah, he was more of a chess guy. But you know what I mean? Like, he would have had no problem doing that. Sisko probably wouldn't have. Janeway definitely wouldn't have. Even Archer wouldn't have. But it's like, Picard is such a TNG character. You know what I mean? It does show growth, even for Picard's character, for him to be like, you know what? I should have done this a long time ago. And I think it's beautiful. I actually think it's one of the strongest moments in the 700 and whatever episodes in the 13 movies of Star Trek. I just, that moment to me, every single time I watch it, it hits me. It really, you know, whatever that means, it really emotionally impacts me. And I think it's really important.
Agreed.
Here.
Come in.
Am I too late?
Of course not. Pull up a chair.
What's the game?
Five-card draw. Deuces wild. Come in.
Is there a problem, sir?
No. I just thought that I might join you this evening. If there's room.
Of course. Have a seat.
Riker says that like a douche.
Would you care to deal, sir?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Data.
Actually, I used to be quite a card player in my youth, you know. I should have done this a long time ago.
You are always welcome.
So, five-card stud, nothing wild. And the sky's the limit.
I think.
Oh gosh!
Stay tuned for the next episode of Deep Space Nine.
Don't you dare, Philip! Don't you dare!
I think I'm getting a little emotional just from listening to it. It's, the ending of it is so perfect in the fact that, as all good Star Trek does, it's trying to teach us a lesson. Like, the ultimate lesson of all good things is, you know, that, well, he does it, Q does it in Tapestry as well, but also in All Good Things, he's, I think part of what he's trying to teach Picard is, like, don't take for granted what you have right now, at least, you know, to a certain degree, and Picard certainly learns that lesson in the episode, and I'm tearing up.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah. No, it's a great ending. It hits the tone of what it needed to hit perfectly.
Well, I was going to point out the reason they're nervous is that the last time Picard came into the poker room, he was a doppelganger alien copy. So that's probably why.
To be fair, he also sang like Irish jig songs on Intent Forward.
A British tongue is a soul as free as a mountain bird. Haven't you met Gilbert and Sullivan, Mr. Worf?
Well, you know what, guys? We've been talking about all good things. And honestly, if it was up to me, I would have changed it to all great things. And here are some other great things that you might have been missing elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
A Mark Twain commentary.
He's got his, I love his room chest with the weird lights. And
well, he shops at Spencer's.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Oh, poor Colin.
Oh, that joke will kill in America.
Earl Grey.
Geordi LaForge.
They're, you know, Sherlock and Watson flying in the face of copyright laws that they didn't realize at the time.
The Ready Room.
Emergence.
The entire scene that Picard and Beverly have is about one-upping each other with pointless trivia about the Orient Express that they each have. Well, did you know? Well, Beverly, I knew that, but did you know this? And it's like, what is the point of this scene? I don't...
The Orb.
Trial on trial.
There are motifs that carry through, like holding her hands behind her back.
Right, exactly. And that's where I think you get the variation on a theme. You know, it's not a new song. It's not even a new verse. It's a reordering of notes to create something different and yet similar.
To the journey!
Costumes on Voyager.
Take that, Enterprise D. That's right. You think your mind was blown in 87. Just wait until you see it in 97. Warp 5.
TOS impressions of seasons 1 and 2.
Once I actually started watching it, I began to understand that it was about our future leading into TOS. It's more of a sequel for us than it is a prequel for TOS.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The X-Files, Small Potatoes.
When I get to this episode, I get excited.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the ones that I continually find more things to like about it.
Melodic Treks.
The music of a Mock Time.
Yeah, we can do a Muppets podcast, too. I mean, at this point, we might as well, right?
Right.
I mean, we're doing every other show.
Literary Treks.
The Return of the Serpent.
So they all shoot the dinosaur, and then they look back, and
they
the Klingon...
They all have to shoot the dinosaur.
And then the Klingon's like, no, I can't do it. I don't want to shoot him. I can't. If I do it, then I'll turn into one of those Klingons that I don't like. You mean one of the Klingons that's helpful?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Earl Grey to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week, from classics to current bestsellers, and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World. Audible has something for everyone. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day free trial, just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and the latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/TrekFM, and we thank Audible for supporting Earl Grey and all of Trek FM. And lastly, there's one more way you can directly help us keep Earl Grey coming to you each week, and that is by adopting some aliens. Well, illustrations anyways. If you go to TrekFM/donate, you'll find 8 original alien illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork you see on our website. They're available as both badges and art prints, and there are different contribution levels for you to choose from. Just let us know which you would like in which format. Again, you'll find them at trekfm/donate, and your support helps us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring you Earl Grey and all of our other great shows every single week. All right, guys, if anybody wanted to find you guys on the internet or around hanging out, maybe you're a future version of yourself, where would they go, Darren?
They can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi. That's D-R-S-C-I-F-I. If they also like talking about other bits of science fiction, I have another podcast called The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, which is on my website, which is drsci-fi.com.
Great, Philip, and where could they find you?
They can find me on Flegum, which is a social network that hasn't been invented yet, but it's going to be really big in 25 years. But until then, you can find me on Twitter at handle NC Public Servant.
All right, and they can find me also on Twitter, which is the best way, at 1UpDan. That is the number one, not the word. All right, guys, I'm heading towards the Devron system to find my next cup of Earl Grey, so I guess I'll see you next week. Engage.
Make it so.
Live long and prosper.